sure they do.
Yeah. Because I know a lot of times our services, you know, at the pediatric level, for some reason, we have more success charging or getting reimbursement. But a lot of times, the dietitian is a supportive service that I think is absorbed by the clinic, is my understanding. But
not as
yeah. And that might be a good thing. Yeah, like that might be a good question to kind of put back, because I know from like a clinic standpoint, that's not necessarily something that we have to indicate on what our clinic offers. But that might be a good thing for you guys who are leaders and representative ambassadors of your PNC clinic is to ask those questions. You know, because we think about them from a neurological standpoint with like pseudogenic type procedures. But I will say that a lot of these questions and concerns are not addressed because we don't really have, we've been at Labanor, but not a lot of clinics are really utilizing the dietitian services where a lot of our patients are struggling, even whether if it's just, you know, weight loss in general or if it's like a real multiple disease processes that are causing you know, issues for you to maintain a healthy diet, weight, or just overall health. So I say advocate from not only a legislative level, but from starting with your clinic, then regional, and I would love to see something like this to be more discussed by the TSC Alliance in general because it's so important.
Yeah, and I think in total agreement with you, and I think the other key component is going back to the education factor. You know, if you know about, you know, how much, like I know here at Vanderbilt, I see some folks who are just really, and I say this in the most sincere manner and all humility, but really backwoods. They've just come up to, you know, because of their diagnosis with their child, anywhere from newborn to like 8 years old, and they very are in the dark. So trying to educate them, let alone on seizures and seizure management and what TS is and what to look forward to, let alone a nutritional component and the importance of nutrition, they're not to understand that maybe sometimes inflammation is a big issue for them. And, you know, a lot of food they eat, as you know, like your starches, your pastas, you know, enough to make play a lot of havoc. And I think what I found myself doing, at least one time a few years ago, I told patients to, you know, check with the dietitian at the school and see what she thinks about the food they serve. Just to spark an interest to get that parent involved on a baseline effort, if you will, just to advocate for themselves. You know what I mean? So it's a tough sell sometimes because people just don't know. And, you know, I know you guys at Labanor are doing an awesome job with what y'all are doing out there. And, you know, along with every other clinic, I mean, tuberous sclerosis is a tough gig as it is, let alone, you know, the finer tastes, pardon the pun, if you will, with nutritional values. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Is anybody, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. You're going to ask them.
I was going to ask if anybody else had a question out there. We're getting close. It's 7:44. I mean, this is a good discussion. Some great information. Anybody else have something that they want to ask or share? I'll throw this at you from what you see in the PED side over at Labanor. What would you tell a patient who, say, he's got a 4 or 5-year-old who only wants McDonald's and it's nonverbal? And what suggestions do you give to that who has bad seizures to help with a postictal side effects, that bad headache? What kind of food would you recommend to them?
Let me make sure I understand my question. So a 4 or 5-year-old that's nonverbal, that's having seizures?
They have postictal headaches. Yep, they have seizures, and they end up with, you know, the postictal headaches and stuff. What would you recommend as any kind of food that might help with that, nutritionally wise, nutritional value?
Well, I think that's a great question. I also think that's a very multifactorial question, too, because that could change based upon the patient, unfortunately. So I don't know if I have a great, I don't want to say anything, and then it can be very individualized, is what I would have to say.
I think also, too, it, like, with the multifactorial aspect of that, I always, like, really try to target and customize that a patient. And so understanding, you know, the really the reason for the headache. I mean, there's different nutritional things that can affect headaches, you could tell them to stop doing these things, stop eating these foods, eat more of these foods. But if that's not the real reason they're having the headache, you know, I feel like you kind of have to dig into the more specific reason as to why they may be having it.
And I think that to have like a specific like potential headache related to that's not an uncommon side effect of having a seizure. And so I think the part maybe that's more is it more of like because the child's nonverbal and might not pick up on it, and it might just be more of a behavioral change that's the concerning factor.
Yeah, that's fair enough. It could be, like you said, individualized. It could be like, and I'll just take one step forward. I know it's me when I have a seizure, and I'm a minor nocturnal, so I'll wake up and I still have a bad postictal headache left over. And it seems like I'm hungry, but I don't know what's more appropriate to eat that's going to help that headache, if anything at all, besides a Motrin or something, or an aspirin, you know?
Yeah, okay.
Oh, you can go ahead.
No, you go ahead, Ashley.
I don't necessarily think that eating is actually the best option for a postictal headache. I think that it's more of a mechanism that we kind of, the behavioral thing that we wanted to do. I don't necessarily, from my understanding with working with Dr. Wheelis, there's not a nutritional gain. I would say that if anything, hydration and making sure you're not dehydrated and drinking water, because it kind of falls more into that tension migraine type concern. I mean, that's something to definitely speak with your neurologist about, because if you have them frequently, then you can definitely work with some different type of medicines that can help with that. But one of the things that we worry about that can make migraines and post-ictal type symptoms worse is honestly dehydration. So my answer to a lot of things is drink more water. And then if you have drink a bottle of water and no stimulation. And I know it's really hard to get kiddos off their iPads or their devices, but that stimulation really causes a lot of tension, headaches. And if you kind of expose that right after and you already are experiencing postictal headaches, then it just kind of exacerbates the problem. And so my theory is you always drink more water, and you always try to give yourself that time. That's a great question, because I'm not ever really familiar with anything from a dietary standpoint that would improve that. But, you know, that's something to bring to your care team if your child is nonverbal. You know, it might not be a bad idea to kind of make sure that, you know, dehydration isn't exacerbating the postictal symptoms. So it might just be a matter of, you know, giving more water throughout the day, or if your child has a G-tube, you know, to keep make sure that you know their fluid intake, because we don't really, outside of probably what Lindsay and I do specifically with chronic kidney disease, a lot of places I know don't routinely ask you, how much are you drinking today, or how much fluid are you giving your child? You know, regardless of age, especially if they're nonverbal. And I would say 90% of the time I ask that, most of the patients are not getting enough.
Okay. Fair enough. Anybody else? Any other callers online that have a question or a thought?
I have a question. have a question.
Go right ahead.
Okay. Adult person, I don't know if you I came in late to the call, but I don't know if you spoke about pills, like keto burn pills or powder, the safety of that, and as well as cycling off keto. Like, should you be on, like, 2 weeks, a month, and then go back to, quote-unquote, a nutritional hard diet and then go back after a while? What's the best thing?
So I would say that if you're an adult with TA, I'm just going to assume that you have some sort of kidney disease. I would say that if you walked into Le Bonheur and we were treating you, we would absolutely not recommend any keto pills or burn or powder because it can cause severe metabolic acidosis issues that can actually put you into renal failure quite quickly if you're not careful. So unless you're under the direct supervision of a physician, nurse practitioner, or and renal dietitian, because anytime we would do something like that, you're not just getting a physician, nurse practitioner, you're getting physician, nurse practitioner, pharmacist, renal dietitian, multiple people are watching you because of the severity you could have. So so I would say that if you are wanting to do that, you really need to make sure that you are addressing this with your healthcare team.
And I would probably add to, I'm not sure the reason the type of ketogenic diet, but my understanding of, you know, a therapeutic ketogenic diet is that once you are on that to get the full benefits of it, I would not think that cycling off of it, if it is something that you're being monitored by a provider and it's been recommended for seizure control or something like that. And I know it's specifically in the case of seizure control that actually going off the diet or out of ketosis in not a gradual weaning, sometimes if you go back on, it's not as effective at the seizure control as it was the first time. So again, I think Ashley was saying, as far as the pills and powders, that's something that's kind of separate from what would be recommended for a medical reason to be on the ketogenic diet, and not something that we would typically recommend. And then if you were on the ketogenic diet for specific therapeutic reasons, cycling that would not be advised as well.
So I want to make a very clear point with ketogenic diet that we actually didn't state earlier. The ketogenic diet is never intended for weight loss. I know that is a huge fad right now, but it is not recommended for weight loss from a medical perspective. And if you do have seizures and you put yourself in and out of ketosis, and you drop yourself very low, you can actually put yourself in a status epilepticus. So it can be very dangerous. So you can either put yourself into a status seizure, or you can put yourself into acute renal failure. And those are two bad scenarios. So again, ketogenic diet is not recommended for weight loss. I know there are some good intentions of providers out there who recommend it for weight loss, but from a internal medicine, nephrology aspect, even neurology, I don't really see neurology giving a whole lot of weight loss advice, but because it's really only geared towards improving seizure outcomes. So just be very careful, educate yourself, and then, really try to discuss that with your healthcare team if you feel like that's something that you really need to do.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that, because I think that is just a more common misconception, and I think that that's very, very needs to be put out there. Let's see. We got 7:56. Maybe we've got time for one more question or a comment. Anybody feel brave enough at this point in time? Please, bump the nutritionist.
Well, you've heard of Bulletproof Coffee, maybe? That's MCT oil and butter in a coffee, like butter coffee. So people are, you know, take that in the morning, not necessarily with a keto diet, but more, you know, the brain function. And do you know about it? Do you recommend or not recommend it?
I do know about it. It's not something, I guess it's not something that I strictly advise against. I just also am not sure that it, or I don't think that the claims behind it are necessarily proven or scientific based. I will tell you that coffee is a stimulant. So a lot of people will have their morning coffee and typically need to have a bowel movement. MCT oil can also have the same effect. So GI-wise, I don't know if I would advise it. It could have some not desired effects as far as that goes. I think that there are probably more balanced and nutritious breakfasts that could be chosen, ones that include protein and healthy fats. Medium chain triglycerides are naturally found in foods. So I don't know that that it's the best choice as far as nutrient density or, you know, that there's probably better breakfast choices out there.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
And if you struggle with cholesterol and non-statins or anything like that, just be really careful at all the extra fats that you're adding to your diet, too. So just kind of keep that in mind.
Yes, and again, I will stress MCT oil does have an effect on your GI, so it can cause looser. Sometimes we recommend it in small amounts for constipation. So it can sometimes, in combination with coffee, not be a great combination. So again, I think there's other more nutrient-dense breakfasts out there that can provide the same energy and satisfaction and also additional benefits of vitamins and minerals.
Well, what has been a great combination is Ms. Ashley and Ms. Lindsay tonight. Thank you for your time. I know that the Alliance and the Keto Schools, Adult Reading Coordinators, thank you sincerely for your time spent with us this morning with some really, really good feedback. And you guys did an awesome job. And I know I look forward to seeing you in a few months as we get out there with Alex. Thank you so much. Thank you for those who chimed in. We appreciate you. And keep your eyes out and peeled out for our next call. I think it's next month, should be an open forum. So watch your Facebook pages and emails for that. And with that, again, thank you, Ms. Ashley, Ms. Lindsay, and y'all have a great rest of the night. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Clayton.
Thanks so much for having us.